This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The 17-month-long civil war in Syria continues with no end in sight. Just this week, there were attacks by government forces in urban areas and bombs against government targets by the opposition. And now the war is threatening to expand beyond Syria's borders. Turkey, hosting the opposition to the Syrian regime, is funneling weapons and armed men across the border into Syria, and this in turn has led to mortar attacks by the Syrians and counterstrikes by the Turks. To help us understand the situation in Syria, we're joined on the phone from Berkeley by Con Hallinan. Con is a columnist with Foreign Policy in Focus. The war in Syria started as a struggle within that country, and now it seems to be spreading to a regional war. How has that happened?
Well, it did, of course, begin inside the country, and what happened was that there was a demonstration by a bunch of Syrian teenagers, really, and the Assad regime seized them and tortured them, killed several of them. It reacted incredibly brutally, as it does. I mean, it's a very brutal regime, and so it reacted to opposition with this enormous brutal response. But what's happened now is that the civil war has been kind of hijacked in a certain sense by regional rivalries and also sectarian rivalries. So we now have the situation where Syria, who's closely allied to Iran, overthrowing the Syrian regime would then isolate Iran, according to the United States and a lot of the European countries. And Saudi Arabia, so they would like to overthrow the Assad regime as a way of isolating Iran. Turkey, on the other hand, has some regional, goals, etc. It would like to have a closer relationship with Egypt, like be able to plug into the money from the Gulf Cooperation Council, Saudi Arabia, etc. And so they have a dog in this fight too, because they see Syria as a sort of a roadblock to that, to playing a more dominant role for Turkey in the region. And then thirdly, there's the sectarian issue with Sunnis versus Shiites, even though the Alawites are a kind of odd variety of Shiite. And so you got all of these currents that are at work here, and so you have fighting in Lebanon, you have fighting in Turkey, you have fighting in Iraq, you have instability in Jordan. It's just a mess.
With regard, if we return then to the initial starting of the opposition, you link it to a demonstration inside Syria by Syrian youth. How wide would you say is the popular base for opposition to the Assad regime?
I don't think the Assad regime is particularly popular, even among people who currently support the government, because they're worried about the growth of sectarianism. They're worried, Christians are worried about being attacked by Sunni fundamentalists. The Alawites are concerned about that. It's incredibly, Syria is an incredibly diverse, ethnically, religiously, etc. And all of those people are nervous about their position, because Sunnis make up about 80% of the population. So I would not say that the Assad regime has a huge amount of enthusiastic support, but I don't think the rebels also own everybody. I mean, I think that a lot of people are kind of standing on the sidelines, and they're worried about the rebellion. They're worried about what that will mean for the future. So it seems to me that what you have is a stalemate right now. I don't think the Assad regime can defeat the rebels. I don't think the rebels can defeat the Assad regime unless there's some kind of massive intervention from the outside, either Turkey or NATO or some variety of that kind of thing. So it's very hard, you know, it's very hard to say. Just one note, these incidents that have happened along the Turkish border with the shellings back and forth, you know, one of the things that Al Jazeera pointed out, which has not gotten into the American press, is a lot of these villages in Turkey that have been subjected to these artillery attacks are much angrier at the Turkish government than they are at the Syrian government, because they consider that the Turkish government has allowed these rebels and arms and everything like that to infiltrate across into Syria, and the Syrians are responding to them. So in a sense, what happens is these villagers are being put in the middle of a battle between the Turkish government and the Syrian government, and they're, you know, they're the collateral damage from it.
Well, the outside interference has taken another form, and that's with jihadis or Islamic zealots increasingly being involved in the fighting. How much is that a factor, and why is that a factor?
Well, I think it's a growing factor, and one of the reasons is because it's the jihadists who are getting the bulk of the money from the Gulf Cooperation Council, which essentially means Qatar and Saudi Arabia. You know, the Saudis have a foreign policy which supports these kinds of people, and they do it in Pakistan, they do it in Afghanistan, they do it throughout the Islamic world. And so it's not at all a surprise that these jihadists are getting the bulk of that money and equipment and everything that from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So because of the fact that they have the weapons, and because of the fact that many of them also have training, fighting in Iraq, fighting in other places, etc., they kind of rise to the top. And you know, there's a good deal of tension between the sections of the Free Syrian Army, which are not sectarian, and then these particularly sectarian groups. I think in the long run, they grow at the expense of the regular rebellion, because, as I said, they have access to resources that that other groups in the Free Syrian Army do not.
Is that role of the jihadists creating a tension with American policy, which seems to want to, for sure, weaken the Syrian regime, because it's been one of the main countries in the Middle East that has opposed American policy? And because there seems to be a back and forth with the Americans and NATO not really wanting to become engaged, though they do want to destabilize the whole region.
Well, I think back and forth is a good way to put it. I think that what's clear to me, anyhow, is that there is probably a division going on right now in the Obama administration. You have a group of people who are saying, watch out. You know, we may be training the next, you know, the next generation of Taliban al-Qaeda. And others who are saying, you know, no, look, what we got to do is overthrow the Assad regime, because the major danger in the Middle East today is Iran. And I think both of those things are at war with one another. And so far, the administration has publicly taken the position, well, we're not funneling arms in. But of course, what they are doing is that they are certainly making it easier for the Turks to do that. We don't know what they're doing in terms of intelligence gathering, etc. We do know that they put a bunch of soldiers into Jordan. And so the question is, are those soldiers in Jordan, are they there to deal with the border between Jordan and Syria, or are they there because There could be, and there is, growing unrest in Jordan. So I think the administration at this point is, you're saying, you know, kind of going in two different directions. I think they are going in two different directions. And it's not clear what exactly they're going to do, except that they're calling for a regime change in Syria, which makes any kind of diplomatic resolution of this very difficult.
Before we get to that problem of resolution and your thoughts on that, and just go back to the question of the refugee problem. How large is that in Syria? How many Syrians are fleeing?
We don't know exactly what the numbers are, but according to the last count, the United Nations registered about 250,000 refugees. Now apparently Jordan has the largest number. For a while, Turkey had the largest number, around 90,000. But Jordan is apparently pretty close to 100,000 at this point. And then there are, of course, refugees in Lebanon and not very many in Iraq, but some in Iraq. I mean, it's certainly a tragic situation. I find there's a certain amount of hypocrisy going on here, because while we're bemoaning the fact that there are something like 250,000 or 300,000 refugees from Syria, you know, the U.S. never said a word about the fact that there were 2 million Iraqi refugees that left Iraq and 2 million internal refugees that were displaced from where they were living. So there were 4 million refugees created by the Iraq War. I mean, I do find there's a kind of a double standard here, where this is a great tragedy, what's happening in Syria, but it wasn't a great tragedy, it was happening in Iraq because we were overthrowing a dictator. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that goes on. But it's a real problem.
It was about 1 million of the Iraqi refugees who found shelter in Syria itself.
Yes, large numbers. And still, by the way, still do. Still large numbers of Iraqis in Syria.
To come to the conundrum problem, the war going on for 17 months, what are your thoughts on resolution of that conundrum?
Well, I will say that, you know, it is frustrating because, you know, just a couple of days ago, the Turks did something that I really am still trying to catch my breath around, stopping this airplane, commercial airplane coming from Russia to Damascus and forcing it to land with F-16s. And then saying they found munitions, which the Russians absolutely deny and say they were radar parts. And in fact, those are covered by international law. It's there's no ban on importing defensive radar apparatus or parts. And you see something like that and you say, you know, it looks like people are moving towards a real, you know, war situation. There's part of me that has a hard time thinking that it would actually break out into a regional war, but I don't see anyone being particularly interested in finding a diplomatic resolution besides maybe the Russians and the Chinese. Both sides of this have sort of dug themselves in. UN recently proposed to the Assad regime that it declare a ceasefire and sort of back off, and then they'll get the rebels to declare a ceasefire. But the rebels refuse to declare a ceasefire, and they're not interested in discussions because they take the position they're going to overthrow the Assad regime, and that's the position that their sponsors take as well. That is the United States and France and Turkey, etc. It seems to me that there has to be a back off on all sides. The Syrian regime has to stop this nonsense that all they're doing is fighting foreign jihadists. I mean, they're fighting Syrians for the most part. There are certainly foreign jihadists in there, but these are Syrians who have legitimate grievances, and certainly one of them is that you shouldn't be able to inherit power. You know, that should have gone out with feudalism. So So you have to, the Assad regime has to recognize that it's a legitimate political opposition on the other side, and they have to negotiate with them over real things. On the other side, the rebels are going to have to recognize that it's a stalemate. If they take the position that the Assad regime has to be overthrown, well, then there's no reason for the Assad regime to negotiate, and it's a fight to the death. And I think the third thing is that countries like the United States and France, other NATO countries, Turkey, etc., are going to have to recognize that you can't talk about some kind of resolution while you're continuing to filter fighters and weapons into Syria, and that eventually they're going to have to confront the kind of foreign policy of the Gulf Cooperation Council, led by Saudi Arabia, that is a pure reactionary. These are monarchies. They would like the Middle East to essentially consist of monarchies and religious governments.
We're going to have to leave it with that, Con. Thanks very much.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Con Hallinan. He's a columnist with Foreign Policy in Focus. You can read his articles on Syria and other issues at fpif.org.